Okay, so I don't know how many times I have to reiterate this, but I will do it again. We are rushing through this because we only have one more day after today at most, which makes me very sad. I'm crying. But the point. Like I said, the sugya of koshering is very large, so please don't start saying, oh, like, I learned kosher, you know, the halacha of koshering for 2 days, and now I'm an expert, and now I can start paskening. If you do that, I will disown you, okay? No. Or at least, as one of my rabbis once said, if you quote me as if what I said was halacha l'maisa, when it clearly wasn't, right, I will deny it.
Training to be a mashgiach, does that cut, are you knowledgeable in koshering?
What?
If you're training to be a mashgiach, are you knowledgeable in koshering at that point?
Vaguely.
Right,
the crash course, mashgacha course, those courses, they do just enough so that you can, like, notice if someone's bringing in pig or something. Yeah. I don't know, into kosher kelim. You're not, like, necessarily, I don't know, I assume some of them are more thorough than others, but, you know, there's a lot to learn in kosher, and it takes about a year usually in smicha. And these crash course 6-week mashgacha things, or 3-week, or 3 days.
No.
Okay. So. What I want to do is to show you a modern shayla that was asked. So, as we've talked about, the assumption of koshering is that your pots and pans absorb taste. They absorb taste, therefore, if you cook not kosher, then what happens to the non-kosher taste?
It gets
absorbed into the pot, and now it can create problems, and you have to kosher it. If it's meat or milk, then it creates problems, not because it's usher, but because it will become usher if it mixes with the opposite. The problem then emerged when we started creating kalim, which, well, don't absorb, like stainless steel. And if you would like, you can Google and you'll see that, oh, in a hanami, one cannot, right? Stainless steel just doesn't absorb things. That's the point. Right? That's part of why it's stainless, right? So what do you do?
Is it one of those, like, low plug things? Like,
good, so let's first talk theoretically. What possibilities could we say? Right, given the reality that stainless steel kalim don't absorb.
Well, it applies as a metal. It's in the category of metal kalim.
Good, so one could claim.
So kosher, but then you don't have any problem if it gets mixed.
So one could say, well, you have to treat stainless steel kalim like any other kalim, as the Gemara discusses it, because, you know, this is a formal rule. It is low plug, right? And now there is nothing we can do about it. And therefore, it doesn't matter that the reality is different. And then you'll say, isn't koshering all about taste? You'll say, whatever. It's about categories, right? Right? That's one possibility. Another possibility, which is similar to that, is basically the position of Schechter takes, which is not low plug, but the halacha was formalized that all metal kalim need hechsher, right?
It falls under the category.
And when Mashiach comes and we bring back a Sanhedrin, they will, might, probably will, I don't know, right? Whatever formulation you want, will rewrite Hilchot Kashrut. But in the meantime, we don't have a Sanhedrin, and therefore, we have to perpetuate the halacha.
So it's machamer. So
yes,
it's a chumrah.
I mean, this is similar to low plug. No, it's not a chumrah.
What? It kind of sounds like he's making.
No,
it's not.
No, it's not. Okay. It's based on a rule in the Gemara called Davar Shebeminyan, Tzarech Minyan Achar LaHatiro. That anything that was instituted by a formal Bezdin cannot be uprooted without another Bezdin.
But it wasn't
uprooted. And therefore, the way he understands it is that the halacha is basically, right, was decided on in the Gemara. And therefore, it is, right, it's not quite low plug the way you're saying it. It's that this was the way the laws of kashrut were instituted, and therefore now, if you would want to change them, you would need a bezdin. We don't have a bezdin, and therefore, it's the equivalent of a low plug. Not because that was the, you know, but the real reason is because, yes, maybe if we had a Sanhedrin, they would look at the reality and say stainless steel doesn't absorb and therefore shouldn't be treated the same way as regular metal. But we just can't change the halacha like that because...
Yeah, but it's also not one of the metals in the Torah as well.
Right? Now that would be another model that you could take. Right? Both of those, lemaisa, would say that nothing has changed for metal kalim, even stainless steel kalim. Even if they acknowledge that the reality doesn't fit... Right, those are different ways of saying, but the halacha stays the same.
The question is whether you need to kashrut or not, as opposed to why.
One sec. Another possibility would be to say that maybe we misunderstand bliyot. And this is the way Rabbi Jachter quotes it from Rabbi Bleich, though I do have to admit that when we asked Rabbi Bleich about this, he said that Rabbi Jachter totally misunderstood him, and it was nonsense, and had some very choice words for Rabbi Bleich. But therefore, I will have to say that Rabbi Jachter is just wrong, because Rabbi Bleich, he was quoting Rabbi Bleich, and Rabbi Bleich says he never said it. But the way Rabbi Jachter puts Rabbi Bleich, despite this qualification, is that... No. Like I asked, he said... that another way is just to say that it must be that the Gemara isn't really talking about bliyot of like actual taste. It's metaphysical bliyot, you know, halachic bliyot, right? Halachic absorption. It doesn't really mean real absorption.
I hate that.
Well, to be fair, well, that's what I said. I just said that Rabbi Jachter quotes this as Rabbi Bleich's position. Rabbi Bleich said, "I never said such a thing. He misunderstood me. I didn't say that. It never happened." And but like I said,
so there isn't such a position.
Like I said, he has some more choice words, which I'm not going to say.
We separate kosher. Tefillah and kosher are separated because of one's more halachic, one's for purpose.
So that would be another way. The Rabbi Bleich said it's not what he meant at all. He just meant something akin to like the first ones, which is like, you know, you can't necessarily... Or it's not dependent on like the Metzius as much, whatever. All that's possible. Now, all the way to the other extreme, what would the other possibility be?
It is not...
Yeah, the other possibility would be...
It's not.
Goodbye. Right? Meaning, Chazal weren't formalizing a halakha. They were describing a reality, and they were saying, if you have a pot or pan made of a material that absorbs, so then you must kosher it. If it doesn't absorb, then...
Don't
then unkosher it. And therefore, while in the time of Chazal, metal absorbed but could be koshered, clay absorbed but could not be koshered,
stainless
steel doesn't need to be koshered at all. It just needs to be clean. Right?
Stainless steel isn't porous?
What? Nope. That's exactly the point. That's right?
Case.
Right? Or alternatively, you could do what AB says and said, well, it's not really porous, but maybe it has like, you know, one part per, which it might have like one part for like 10 million or something.
I know you can, what's called season, which is basically like you can build up a layer of like...
Oh, that obvious, but that's outside, right? That's like, right? The question is inside,
the
right?
The seasoning is made up of stuff that you've cooked before. That's the whole point.
No, but it's caked up, right? Like it's sometimes physically there, like you leave it dirty. Right, no. Obviously,
no,
if it's...
No. It's like in... It comes in the pan. So cast iron, it does more, but you can do that also with the...
Right, so one way to do is to say, well, you know, maybe our pots really do absorb...
Less than cast iron.
Maybe they absorb... Right, cast iron for sure does that. But, right, certain pots you'd say, well, you know, maybe it absorbs a little bit, like one part per X number of million, and that's sufficient, right?
It'd still be in
the clear. But fundamentally, you could go all the way to the other extreme and say, look, stainless steel basically doesn't, you know, absorb. And Chazal weren't giving you a formal rule. They were just describing reality and saying that their metal kalim absorbed and therefore needed to be koshered. Ours don't, and therefore they don't need to be koshered, right?
Right. I mean, how well does it have to absorb in order for it to be considered
again,
an absorbent pan?
So again, you could deny the whole thing and say, nah, it does absorb a little bit, right?
Maybe it's
now,
just a case of, we don't, it shouldn't... It should
based on what we've been saying until now, though, could you come up with a middle position? Which I, in fact, had said several times. But what is the middle position you could come up with? Guys, what's the middle position that you could come up with?
Hovel without a bra.
What?
Tovel without a bracha.
What? Where's Tovel?
What are you talking about?
Sorry.
You told me regardless.
You don't kosher with a bracha ever.
I know. I was mixing up the two.
There's no bracha with a bracha? I forgot.
No, there
good.
Isn't.
No, there isn't. So what would a middle position be? Come on, guys, think.
Hot water. No, that's still kosher.
With stainless steel?
Yeah.
I mean, physically that makes sense.
It's a way of you have to clean it.
Why is that a middle position?
I mean, because you said you have to clean it regardless.
Why is that a middle position? That is exactly how you kosher a stainless steel pot with boiling water.
Oh, I thought it was a fire.
No.
Yep. Okay, because the medium is technically the other thing. Yeah, it's hot water. Clean it with cold water.
That'd be an interesting one. Not a coherent position.
Like you spray hose down your giant...
Power wash.
Not a coherent position, but sure. No, obviously you have to clean it. That's obvious. That's not a middle position. No one says you can cook with a dirty pot. Right? Oh, look, it has pieces of pig on it, but stainless steel, you can cook with it. No, no one says that.
It's okay.
Right?
It's all right.
Come on, what would be a middle position be? Come on, Bebo.
Well, we
both conceptually built it up, and I've actually said this position.
A middle as to what? Why we don't have to kosher?
What you would do with stainless steel nowadays.
Oh. I mean, there's either kosher or not kosher. But
nope, there is not.
Kosher once before you, and that's it.
That's what you always do.
Just to tefillah, well, I guess.
There's no, if
no, you always kosher once.
But if you go between mixing, you have to kosher it again if you mix it, though. So
okay, has there you
never
has there
kosher
like,
it again, basically.
What's in between kosher and not kosher?
It's like you have to put the oven on a clean cycle before you put a different thing in it.
Yeah, what's in between? Come on, people.
I don't. It's either kosher or not kosher.
Semi koshering.
No. It's
what is? What's the thing? How do you semi kosher something like that? You only tovel it. Well, it doesn't help.
You just wipe it down.
You require koshering, but if you didn't kosher, you still treat the food as kosher. Right? Why would you justify? How could you justify such a position?
Because it's a
suffix.
So.
No, not a suffix. You could do it suffix, but what did we say? Come on, guys. I said this last week.
Wait, what was the thing you just said prior? If you kosher it...
Kosher it, but if you don't kosher it, the food will not be not kosher.
Oh.
Why would that be a middle position? How would that even make any sense?
Bidi Eved versus...
Because...
Because it doesn't...
Because it's, Chachila, you it's should, a, because it may have absorbed the little...
No!
You're a good Jew.
No!
No, because it's saying that you should, because it may have absorbed, but b'diavad it's fine because it may.
So that's one version, or but remember what we said last week, right? Is that there's good reason to believe that koshering isn't only about removing non-kosher. It's not adding whatever. It's that because even according to the sheet of Tom Kaker Lav Daraisa, once a pot was used for not kosher, you need to kosher it because maybe in addition to merely removing the bliot, there is something else going on. And therefore, if you use it post facto, so no bliot went in, no non-kosher taste or no milk or meat went in,
but there's that,
whatever exactly, that status that you need to do, and therefore you would distinguish between koshering and its actual ability to create non-kosherness.
So would that be something that they say toveling doesn't help with?
Correct.
Right, so you're saying for the stint that middle position because it may have absorbed this, I don't know,
1 million
tumor.
Or because it absorbed, you know, a billionth of a taste, which is not enough to create halachic problems, but enough to require koshering. Right? Because koshering may be more than about just removing that which will create non-kosherness.
Right.
Right? Now, this was an interesting article that came out a few years ago by Rav Melamed. So who is Rav Melamed? Again, now, I do want to just point at this point, as it says at the top of the source sheet, I'm not posking from this, I'm wanting to show you a possible halachic construct, which has been endorsed by other people, but it is far from being mainstream. So who is Rav Melamed? Yeah, good. Who is he? What did he write?
This article.
Have you seen upstairs an entire shelf of a sefer called Pinnei Halacha?
Ah, yes.
Which is like one of the most popular halachas farm in Israel, in English and in Hebrew?
I'll just say yes.
We have that down here as well.
Oh, do we? Rav Melamed is a very, very popular halachic writer. He wrote this series. Is in the middle of writing this series of Pinnei Halacha, which has I don't know how many volumes.
You mean he still is?
Still around? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
There are many, many volumes of this, and he keeps putting out new ones. He has on kashrus. He has on brachos. He has on tefillah. He has on hilchot yamim tovim. He has on Shabbat. He has on
physically every.
On halachot of, you know, marital halachot in his book Simchat Beit Torah or something.
He's trying to be a different Ovadia Yosef.
Is it just me? Does he never give him smicha?
What? A different Ovadia Yosef?
Did he say it again?
He never says raw.
He never gives his raw.
I've said raw.
Never. He's never said it.
Like any rabbi, you don't give him a smicha.
No, like Rabbi Ovadia. He always just calls him Ovadia Yosef every time.
Are you sure?
Yes. I'm sure. Listen, it's on record. You can go back and see if you've ever given him smicha.
I think you should notice the significance how he doesn't say Rabbi Ovadia.
You did it too, okay? You said fast doesn't come.
You hold you in a higher regard.
Yeah.
Some reason the rabbi doesn't stick when I say it fast. That's the problem.
Okay. But, no, he writes, he's a very, very, very clear writer. And his works have become very, very popular in English and in Hebrew. The English translator lives in Buchman. Yes, Rabbi Eli Vischer is the head of the translation for Pnei Halacha. And has translated... Well, he actually didn't translate this article. This article I translated. But fundamentally, yes. He is the head of their translation department. I don't know. You can call it whatever you want. He's a very interesting posek. A very clear writer. Often very bold. Interesting person. So he wrote an article on this topic a few years ago, like 2-3 years ago, something like that. Okay, so here's what he wrote. Okay, so would you like to look at the Hebrew, the English? Oh, the Hebrew, good.
It's the Hebrew, yeah.
But if you want, you can look at my translation underneath.
B'chodashim ha'acharonim. You didn't do German.
In the last few months, asaknu b'shiva b'sheila g'dola b'sugyat hacharat kelim shebishlu b'hem achalim asurim. We've been dealing with the very complicated topic of koshering vessels that were used to cook forbidden foods. Kibasar b'chalav, umachale taref, right? Milk and meat, treif, whatever. Hitbarer me'ever l'kol safek. It became clear beyond any doubt. B'mechkarim madayim u'mitoch nisyonam shekol anashim shebachanu zot minrachem habeiti. He's very practical. It's like both from scientific studies and from the experiments of all the people who tested this in their kitchens at home. Right? I sent my students home and I said, "Listen,
try this.
Cook. I don't know. Make a lentil soup in your pot. Right? Clean it well." And then 12 hours later, make pasta and tell me whether your pasta tastes like lentil soup. Right? This is a very easy test. And surprise! They came back and they said,
"It does."
It does not.
Whoa.
Clean your pot. I'm sorry. How often does this happen to you? Has this ever happened to you?
Oh, he's talking about the stainless steel pot.
Yes.
Oh, okay, fine.
To be fair, you could be talking about any pot. Really? I'm just saying.
Also, to be fair, lentil soup doesn't really have... Bunch of, I don't know.
That's
depends on how you make it.
If I make a cholent,
okay. Take your pick.
I was thinking chicken.
Make cholent in the pot, clean it well, and then make pasta. Does it taste like pasta or does it taste like cholent?
I've had both.
Was it clean?
Yeah, when I make cholent in a crock pot.
Not a crock pot, a crock pot is cheres.
Why do you make pasta in a crock pot?
Oh, a stainless steel pot. Yes, cook. It does not taste like food.
Thank you. That's all. So he said, he sent his students home and he said, "Listen, guys, if you don't trust the scientific studies, then do a very simple experiment. Take your stainless steel pot, cook something in it, clean it, and then cook something else in it, and tell me whether it tastes like the first thing or not." And guess what? His students came home and said,
"It does not."
Or came back from home, rather. They said, "Wow, it's amazing. My pasta tasted like pasta."
Whoa.
Yeah. Shocking. Cast iron, it does a little bit, but... Okay. Anyways. So he says... Shekli amatechet shalanu einam bolim tavim umimela gam einam poltim otam. He said it became quite clear that our metal vessels neither absorb nor emit taste.
Yes.
Klomar, if that wasn't clear enough, he says, meaning to say, if you take milk and you cook it in a pot that an hour ago was used for meat, but it was cleaned very well in between, lo yeh b'chalav shum tam basar. That milk will not taste like meat. He just won't. V'chein, im yivashlu basar taref, yinaku et asir etev, umiyarach hakach yivashlu bo tafshil rekot. If you take pig, cook in your pot, clean it out, and cook vegetables, they will taste, shockingly, like vegetables.
Not like pig.
Lo yargishu rekot shum tam min basar taref. You will not taste any pig. L'cha ora. That would seem that what? L'vize batla mitzvat ha-Torah l'achshir klei matchot shebishlu b'am taref. The simplest conclusion would be, therefore, that you take the halachot of kashering and throw them out. Right? For at least most of our metal kalim. At least stainless steel. At least. Right? But any of our kalim that this is true about.
Makes sense. The other stuff that they had at the time of Matatara was iron or metals that would absorb absorbent metals. They didn't have stainless steel as the times of in
Babylon. Okay. So now skip now to okay, so source 2 are the psukim by Koshering. Source 3 is the Gemara that we have seen, right, in Avodah Zarah. Right? Ayin Heim and Bet, Ayin Vav and Aleph, you've seen this, right? So let's go to 4. This is from Shulchan Aruch. Beitza shenit bashla b'mayim b'kdeira cholevet. If eggs were cooked in a dairy pot, mutar latero ta betocha tarnagolet afil l'chadchila. You can put it in chicken, even l'chadchila. Avalem nit bashla b'kdeira b'asar. But if it was cooked in the pot with meat, afil b'klipa, even with the shell, asur l'achla b'kutach. You can't eat it with a yogurt-y dip.
Shell.
It's an egg.
What? You put the egg shells with the egg in a pot that
it's called a hard boiled egg, man.
Oh,
a boy!
I had to think about. I was thinking of boiling. Cooking
Please.
Doesn't mean boiling.
I've seen smarty chillin'. They put eggs with the eggshell in.
Yeah.
Right. Let it cook in. Right. There's not like a crazy game.
I take off the shell before I put
it in. He was thinking
the
that you stomp. How? Put the egg in a pan alone.
Oh. Shell it and put it in the crock pot.
They just crack the egg into the pan.
Okay.
No.
And the Rama writes, V'yesh. Now the Rama writes, V'yesh machmirin bitzliyav v'shula asor tein tam bar no tein tam. And the Rama says that some by roasting or machmir for what's called, this is called not bar not, no tein tam bar no tein tam, second order taste. Now what does this tell you already?
The second order taste?
Yes, it's called no tein tam bar no tein tam.
Yeah, but there is
not bar not. So what does that tell you? Right? Then not bar not, what is that? What do the halachot of not bar not tell you? And then the Rama goes on, right? Min haglasar lechatchila, you shouldn't do this. Lechatchila, which is the Ashkenazi tradition in Sfardim, do it even. Lechatchila, ubidiyavad mutar b'chol nyam, dachalocha, etc. And it goes on. Now, what does this tell you? Right? What does these halachot tell you? Right? So first of all, that it's possible that things that are actually cooked in problematic pots or meat and milk pots might, definitely according to the Sephardi position, might even be mutter to eat with the opposite thing. Why?
Because there's no problem.
Yeah, because we assume that there's no taste, right? Now, halachot like that seem to indicate that, you know, we really do care about taste. Like, if it's not there, then
then there's no problem.
It's not there. The Ashkenazi position is to not do it lachatchila, at least in certain things.
Even if it's batel, then
batel's another one. Though we do see that there are certain lechatchilas that we don't do this for. Okay, just keep that in mind. Now skip now to number 6. Okay? So, this is something we won't have time to do in depth, but klei zchuchit, glass. Afilu mechnisan lekiyum, afilu mishtamesh behen bechamin. Even if using it permanently, even if you can use them for hot food. Ein tzrichim shum hechsher she'enam bol'im. The Sephardi position is that what?
You do not
need to kosher glass. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Ask me in Sephardi.
Yes. Good. V'shtifab al-masagi lu. Now what does that tell us?
That glass does not.
Glass isn't absorbent.
Thank you. That's more what I was going for. Right? Is that the Sephardi position that says that glass doesn't need koshering is telling you that what?
Glass.
If a clean fact does not absorb, then what would the halacha be?
Yeah, then
don't it doesn't need kosher. Then I'm to kosher it. Wait, but now, the Ashkenazi position is the Ashkenazi position is literally the exact opposite, which is that maybe glass is the equivalent of cheres, right?
Or we said it was clay. Close, we said it was close to metal, also. It kind of has
been. And okay, but the Ashkenazi position is to be machmir, that it is to be machmir. So the Sephardi position is to say it's not porous, it's smooth, and therefore it doesn't absorb, and therefore you don't need a kosher, you can use it in meat, milk, doesn't matter. The Ashkenazi position is punked the opposite, right, which is maybe it's unkosherable at all, and there's a big machlokas about whether this is actually the Ashkenazi minhag, or if it's only the Ashkenazi minhag for Pesach, but during the Yom Remekil, and all types of things.
Apparently, you can do compared glass or
glass. No, glass you can melt back down.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we compared it to the metal.
Yes, but this
it
doesn't.
Had the fact that
yes, but koshering has nothing to do with that. Koshering has to do with absorption, right?
And even then, glass is used in the ovens and stuff, which means it only needs hagala anyway.
Was made with fire.
Yes, but this seems to depend on absorptions. Now, why is this halacha important? Because. Why are Ashkenazim machmir? They treat it like cheres. But what do they not disagree on in principle with the Sephardi position?
The smooth versus
that. Were there to be a material that, due to its physical makeup, did not absorb, then
you
wouldn't have the kosher it. So now,
Rav Malamud, because it is watertight.
So Rav Malamud takes this and says, wait a second, okay. So we know that. Right? There is this position in Shulchan Aruch, which in principle, though for its application of glass, Ashkenazim do disagree. But in principle, Ashkenazim don't disagree, which is that there can be materials that are impervious to becoming not kosher. Right? Which means we actually care about taste. So when there isn't taste, right, we're mekil. Right? And no sintamen or sintamen, things like that. So what should you therefore do with the reality that our kalim don't absorb?
Well, it kind of seems just like both according to both Ashkenazim and Sephardim, it would be mutter.
So this is what he gets. So in 7, this is what he says. Good. So this is what he says in 7. He says, look, yesh omrim, a possible position that some people really do say, which is, sha'af shirit barer shekliyam adachot shalom einam olim polim tamim in l'shanon et amasoret. One way of taking this is, as I said at the beginning, right? Remember, I was just getting you there, is to say, too bad,
But there's no
Mesorah on. Why? Either because you think that because Halacha says something, we can no longer rely on the science, meaning you just got to believe that the science is wrong, right? I'm not endorsing this. I'm saying there are people who say this. Right? Or because whatever has been established as the halacha is now the halacha, whether or not it depends on the reality, either because of low plug or because it was a gzeira and now it needs to be formally uprooted. Ella, 1 second.
Sorry.
Or they say practically, to uproot the way people keep halacha will weaken people's commitment to tradition. Ulam, yoter nireh. He said, but I don't really think that's true. What makes more sense to me is, Shimachin batel yisoda tam shalachsharat kelim. I think that if the reason for koshering the kelim doesn't apply, that custom won't do it, won't keep it usher. Vachin. And he says, indeed, there's some people all the way to the other extreme who say what? Yesh tonim shoel klematchot enam bolim, who say that since our vessels do not absorb, they say we don't need different kalim for meat, milk, chametz and matzah, right? Treif and not treif. Right? Just remember that this will be true of meat, milk, this will be true of
pig,
right? Pig and your food, right? If you hold this, you hold this. You just got to clean them. And they follow the model of Shulchan Aruch by glass. Right? So he said the two extremes are either say, look, this halacha is based on the reality. Does it or does not absorb? If it doesn't, then you don't have to kosher it.
Right.
And you can use it for meat and then milk and then meat and then milk and then meat and milk as long as you clean it in between. And you can use it for pig and kosher, pig and kosher, pig and kosher. Right? All the way to the other extreme, you can say, either deny the science, or say that this is a formalized halacha. A plug, it was a gzera, now it has to be uprooted, right? Like, maybe say like Rav Shechter, which is, then the time of Mashiach, we'll change the halacha, but until then, we can't, whatever, right? But Rav Melamed himself takes the middle position, which is in number 8. I've divided it up into paragraphs. Even though the logic of those who would be lenient is strong and compelling, he said if it got to the point where the majority of poskim accepted the really lenient position, which is that take all of our hechlat kashrut basically and throw it out, he said I would agree. He's like, I'm willing to go that way. Even though we have established that scientifically the amount that is absorbed into stainless steel kaolin, while not non-existent, as AB notes, is so small as to be halachically insignificant.
Right?
He says, "Adayin in vishlubahem tarev chova lachshiram bahagala olibun." I think yourself to kasher. V'chein chova liachet kelim nifardim loasar v'kalav. And he says, therefore, I think you need to kosher it, even though I think it won't cause a problem post facto for three reasons. Right? Why? Okay, so let's read it. What time is it, by the way? What time is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Wait, hold on.
Here is
for glass and for glass. You have to, like, in between using it for meat and
clean
milk,
it.
You have to
clean it.
Just no toveling, nothing?
Nothing.
No. Okay.
For Sephardim, nothing.
I could say, like, you should kosher it because you might come to not kosher your
good.
Other pot.
Good. So here's his three. Let's read them. I'll read them in English, okay? Here's his three. The first principle. We find the sages and to do many decrees to cause separation between meat and milk and prevent mistakes, right? The first is what Nachum said, right? Which is that even if you could do this, it's a really bad idea. And we know that we're really, really careful by meat and milk. And if we would just tell you, yeah, have one pot, use it, meat, milk, right? And just clean it in between, right? Eventually someone's going to use it when? It isn't quite that clean. Right, we all know, right? You burn something in the bottom of the pan, right? Right? In order for you to be allowed to use it now from meat to milk, you'd have to get that off entirely. Right? And how many people are going to sit there and make sure...
Right? Sorry.
Thus, they forbade eating milk together, forbade baking dairy or meat bread, to eat on the table with other kinds of food. One can say that based on these decrees, it is obligatory not to use the same vessels for meat and milk, even if they're normally cleaned, as there is concern that sometimes they'll not be cleaned and it'll come to the mixing of meat and milk. For this reason, one cannot use vessels that are used to cook treif for kosher food, if he gets used to this, that should be. He may use them even when they're not sufficiently clean. However, based on this, it could be that only ab initio, meaning lechatchila, one must be strict. Separation, but after the fact, there will be no obligation to agala or liban on the vessel used to cook drapes. Right? So one is, I don't know if this is a good idea, because look, we're really, really machmer basar b'chalav, and the only way this is going to work is people clean it really, really well, and practically, people are not going to clean it really, really well all the time. So I would still tell you to get separate dishes. The second is that what Nachum said, well, even there's a little bit, it'll be batel. What's the problem with that? There is a prohibition of relying on bitul lechatchila. It's only a post facto halacha. You're not allowed to go out and rely on bitul.
Yeah, but
that is a halacha. You cannot rely on bitul lechatchila. Ein mevatlin isur lechatchila. You can't say if I put 1/100th of my one in 1/100th pieces of meat, milk in my chulent, it's kosher, and therefore pour a little bit of milk in. You can't do that. Then you are not allowed to eat it.
That's only if it falls in my hand.
Correct. And this is not that. You're saying use it, and even if there's a little bit left on, who cares? The answer is
no, but they're
too bad
because there might be some.
Never lying on it.
So he says two things, right? One is that it might be dirty, right? And the other is what AB said is that
no.
If stainless steel does not prevent any absorption; it prevents any significant absorption, but there is something there. One per 10 million. But the point is that what are you now doing by using meat and milk? Does that mean the same dish from meat and milk?
You're ignoring that.
You are being mavatil that. Right? So second principle is that since the precise studies show that with any cooking there is some minimal absorption, although it is impossible to sense the taste, it is forbidden to nullify it in the dish because it's forbidden to actively nullify prohibition. It is therefore imperative to kosher the vessels to remove the minimal absorption. And according to many, we show them this rule is biblical. Right? So rule one, right? Reason one to require koshering is
to
and different dishes from meat and milk is
people might
you might mess it up. Number two is that it's not true that stainless steel has no absorption. It just has barely any absorption, meaning you can't taste it. But lechadchila, and here I don't mean lechadchila b'dieved, I mean ab initio. Well, I do mean that, but I mean ab initio post facto. Remember, lechadchila b'dieved is not what you think it means, right? You always mess this up, and it really annoys me, right? Lechadchila means ab initio. No, that's why it annoys me. No, never say that again. It is wrong. Lechadchila means ab initio, meaning if I ask the question before it has happened, what should I do? B'di'avad means post facto, after it has already happened. It's not the best versus the not best. Lechatchila is what are you supposed to do, and b'di'avad is after it already happened in a non-ideal way, how do I react?
Well, it's what you're supposed to do versus what you can't do.
No!
What?
What if you ask me what you should do, what I tell you versus if you already messed it up and did it, what can we post facto justify? Not what should I do ideally and not. No, what lechatchila is what I would tell you to do if you asked me the shaila before, and b'dieved is if it already happened, what heterim are in our toolbox? That's not ideal versus non-ideal. That's before and after. Do you understand the difference between that? It's not mahadrin and mahadrin and mahadrin. It's what should you do, and if you messed it up, what would be okay anyways?
It's not what should you do, it's what you do. What you
like
need
what
to
you
do.
Need to do. Lechatchila, ab initio. Before the act, what should you do? Right? The third principle is, and this I'll say outside, this was from the Rav, right, which was, well, you know, I'll read it quickly because this is the third that he invokes is right salvation argument, which is the third principle. It is possible the Torah from the Torah that any vegetable used to cook treif, whether to absorb taste or not, needs to be kosher. Right, it needs to be kosher. Like on Libud, why? Right. Remember, what did the Rav say? Right. I'll say this outside because you know I'll just say it outside because we said it.
Wait,
which is
which? The Rav is this?
The right salvation. Remember, I saw this. We said this last week. Right. That since the Torah says that what. You need a kosher, even according to the positions in the Gemara, in the Rishonim, that what? Tam ki ikor lav da'oraisa. Right? That tam, da'oraisa doesn't create any problems, then how can you have koshering? So what was the Rav's argument? That in addition to the question of do the absorbed taste cause problems, there's a separate halacha, which is any pot that was used for not kosher now needs to go through the formal process of koshering. Right? So his third argument is therefore, even if it's true that there's nothing absorbed in it, what should the halacha be? Or barely anything absorbed in it, what should the halacha be? You still have to kosher it. Right? Whether that'll trace things up afterwards is a b'dieved question. But the question of whether you have to kosher it is, right?
Yes, you have to.
Yes. Good. In number 12, he writes, there's another fundamental, important fundamental reason which arose while fleshing out the issues with engineers and chemists who help in our study in the community in yeshiva, as well as experts who wrote responses to the questions they asked in the article a month ago. Even in the past, the metal itself did not absorb taste. And here he introduces something even more important, which is, he said, is this really a new shaila? And he says, well, not really, because metal never really absorbs. This is not new to stainless steel. Even though over the years the metal making has improved, we're not talking about a fundamental change, and even in the past the metal itself did not absorb. Furthermore, the Torah spoke about bronze, silver, and gold, which are known metals which have not changed. He said, besides, this is not some rabbinic mistake. The Torah said you have to kosher metal, right? But metal doesn't really absorb. What does it do? It means that when the sages spoke about absorbed taste in vessels, they meant that taste that clung to the walls of the vessel. Even though it's a thin film, it could be there was a high concentration of taste molecules because of the steam room liquids. The taste was very noticeable, pointing that it was equal to the thickness of the walls. Since we're talking about a thin film, which is that which is exposed to air, goes through a process of accelerated oxidation, which impairs the taste, rabbis establish that after a day, the absorbed taste is impaired and not forbidden. He suggests that maybe you misunderstood all of Hilchot Kashrut, and maybe when the Chazal talk about absorbing, they don't mean like absorbing into the actual like molecules of the metal. What they mean is that a thin film or level of taste, right, sort of sticks to the walls.
So then a good cleaning would be okay.
No, because the Torah said you have to kosher it, right? And he says, what changed, right? What changed was that we developed soap.
Better.
We developed soap. Right, that's what he says in the next paragraph. He says, you must know that only 200 years ago they started creating soaps that allowed removing all fats. Until then, even though you scrubbed the vessel well, and even if they were helped by ashes, long and various materials that helped remove remnants from before still stuck to the sides of the dishes. And the rougher the walls, the more the food from the previous dishes stuck. So sticking to them than the previous dish taste. Thus, the ruling to fulfill the mitzvah of koshering the way it was absorbed was meant for taste that was stuck to them. And even though after Hagala, there's probably still some food left over from before, since we had worked to counter them based on the mitzvah of the Torah to make them be spit out as they got stuck, and their taste could not be sent, there was nullified and longer prohibited. If so, nowadays, we usually remove the layer that's stuck to the pot with soap until no taste is left stuck to the vessel. Since at the time of cooking, the taste was stuck to the vessel, the obligation to kosher the Torah degrees already taken effect is not removed. Time of cleaning. This is the Torah scientific is novel, and I think I missed a line there. Okay. So what? Right. So he said maybe originally koshering was essentially a really really good way of cleaning, and nowadays maybe we do accomplish it by just cleaning. So what's his maskana? So his maskana, as I put at the end, is im kein dvarin lechonim azay mitzvah Torah lachshir kein lechonim taref nutra beina. He said, what I think the best conclusion is, that koshering is still a halacha. Avalim b'diavad b'shlu b'shkaga b'sir treif afil ben yomo. But b'dieved, if you cooked in a pot, even not kosher, or meat and milk, but it was totally clean, even if it was within 24 hours, so what does he say?
It's okay.
Since we know that the taste is not there, it is kosher.
Well, you know,
and therefore, right? So what? Quick. No. Okay. Right. So what does Rav Malamud argue? Rav Malamud tries to, right. So I think this tshuva is important because what does it do? It highlights the possible ways you can deal with this. Right. One is to say, look, the halacha was a formal halacha. Right, if it's a formal halacha, then how much of it has changed despite our new technology?
Zero.
Right? However you want to get to it being formal. Metaphysical bliyot, right? Low plug, right? We can't change the halacha until Mashiach comes. However you want to get there, right? That would be the conclusion, right? Possibility two is, no, kashrus is a halacha based on mitzius, based on the realities it absorbed. And therefore, if you take that to the extreme, what would the halacha be? As long as you clean it well, take our halacha and throw them out. Right? The middle position would be to recognize that there are parts of the halacha that are simply about taste. And those are all the bidyevit questions. Meaning, if I accidentally cooked in a pot that was used within 12 hours, right, is it kosher, is it not? That's a bidyevit question. And then there are the lechatchila questions. Should I kosher, which is the Rav argued, may be based not just on taste, but on a formal halacha, which is that which was used for treif in the past must be go through the formal process of koshering, plus other concerns like we're not sure you're really going to clean it well enough and things like that, right? That would dictate a sort of compromise position, which is halacha of koshering will stay in place. Having separate dishes of milk and meat will be kept in place, right? Because we like separating milk and meat, etc. But if post facto you accidentally cooked with your meat pot that was clean, milk, or vice versa, or not kosher to kosher, right? That there we would say the science is correct and the taste that was absorbed in the walls is minimal and therefore not emitted into our food and therefore kosher. And the way Rav Malamud sets it up I like because what it does is it really gives you the three models in our sugya, right? Which is either to say our sugya is, as much as it seems to be about mitzios, it's formal. Or, no, it seems to be about reality, it really is, and therefore if the reality changes, change the halacha. Or to recognize that in kashrus, as we saw already in tefillah, but even more so in koshering, there are multiple levels. Part of it is purely chazal reacting to the mitzios that they see, and part of it is formal halachic rules that don't change. And the formal rules, therefore, will be maintained, and the substantive rules will change, and that's sort of his compromise position that I think highlights the potential, as we've seen in the last few days, complexity of koshering that has multiple levels to it. Right? Levels that are clearly simply just about removing taste, and levels that are maybe more formal than that, And that's where he comes up with his compromise position. Again, I'm not saying I posk him like this, but I think his analysis does help sort of highlight the different models one could take in the sugya, right? And his particular position actually highlights the way in which Hechsher Kalim may be two types of halachot overlapping, right? Which modern science may require us to pull apart in order to determine which halachot will apply and which ones will change. Okay? Shkoyech.